How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Game 5 was terrible. Now what about Game 6? Let's talk about it.
It's time. You want the best Celtics talk around? Here it is. This is the Rain and Jays podcast. Here's John and Jay.
Well, we've been here before, a Celtics performance that was really actually pretty crappy in Atlanta. For some reason, they just don't like playing in Atlanta. But just like the last time, they're going back to Boston with the confidence that they're going to win in Boston. And we are here to talk people off of the ledge. So, Jay King, go for it.
They're undefeated in Boston in the playoffs this year? That's all I got. After Game 5, that's all I got, man. That's the only thing you're hanging your hat on after Game 5.
Yeah. So, the problems that we've had in Game 5 need a little bit of fixing here, because the Celtics need to figure out how to free up Isaiah Thomas again. And this time he was blitzed on every pick and roll and basically completely taken out of the offense. He was just terrible. He didn't even have any sort of redeeming quality to the game. It was a really rough game for Isaiah Thomas. So I think the first thing that the Celtics need to figure out as we look ahead to this Game 6, if the Celtics are going to force a Game 7, how can they free up Isaiah Thomas?
Yeah, that's one of the things. I would say this. I went back and I rewatched the whole first, second, and third quarters. And Isaiah actually did a really, really good job of getting the ball out against the trap and starting ball movement that got the Celtics a ton of open looks. And I didn't realize how well he read that on my first watch of the game. Obviously, when you're watching Isaiah Thomas, normally you're looking at scoring and how much does he impact scoring. But in this case, he got guys with lots of open shots. And what really hurt the Celtics is no one knocked him down. Jarebko missed a few. Crowder, you know, not only did he miss some, but he looked like he didn't even want to take some. And I think the injuries have really impacted the Celtics and allowed the Hawks to do some things like send those super hard traps at Isaiah that they wouldn't be able to do otherwise. Because if you have Crowder at full health damaging that on the pick and pop, if you have Kelly Olynyk popping as a 40%+ three-point shooter, if you have Avery Bradley on the weak side two passes away instead of Terry Rozier or Evan Turner or Marcus Smart, that's a huge difference. So I don't put that on Isaiah at all. I do think the Celtics have to free him up in Game 6 because he is their only guy that can be counted on right now to make shots. And that's tough for him and that's tough for them, but it's something that they do have to free him up somehow. And part of it is getting out in transition and scoring, getting some easy buckets. And part of it, I think, if guys had just made a few shots early on, the Hawks can't do that defense. And we're not talking about that at all today. So I think maybe that was overrated because the Celtics actually played very good offense for a while against that.
Well, it's overrated in the sense that, like you said, if they had hit shots, then that would have helped, but no one is hitting shots. The Celtics, I think, lost this game in the first quarter because they had the Hawks down actually midway through the second quarter. It was 29-19, literally halfway through the second quarter. 29-19, which is terrible offense on the Celtics' part, but they still had a 10-point lead at that point, and that's when they got the doors blown off. They had a chance in those 18 minutes to really put up big numbers against the Hawks, and they had those opportunities. They lost them, and It burned them. If that was a 20-point lead instead of a 10-point lead, we might be looking at a different story. The Hawks may have panicked. They may have started to run different things. They might have tried to go more one-on-one instead of the ball movement that got Bazemore a million open threes. That was just a big problem. So part of it is, okay, you got to make shots, which is what we said after games one and two. Now, Jerebko only took four shots. Jay Crowder only took 10. Those guys, obviously, in Boston, seem to play differently. But Isaiah Thomas still needs to be the focal point of the offense. They don't score without him being the focal point. So how do they change that up? If we just let them blitz Isaiah Thomas and hope the other guys come through, we're going to lose this series in six. So what do you think? Do you send some rescreens? I saw people on Twitter today talking about, you know what, just let them ISO. Don't even call for the screen.
ISOs work. ISOs don't work because, yeah, he's a fine isolation player. The Hawks, all series long, they've just packed the paint. If he ISOs, they're going to be helping off Evan Turner. They're going to be helping off Marcus Smart. They're going to be helping off Jared Sullinger, Amir Johnson, whoever else. There will be no space. And you don't want to turn a team that literally they were, I think, last in isolation percentage for the entire regular season. You don't all of a sudden go to isolation basketball against a team that can completely load the paint against you and make life thoroughly difficult. We've seen it with the Cleveland Cavaliers. They had trouble last year with LeBron James ISOing to build any type of offense against the Golden State Warriors. And obviously the Hawks aren't the Warriors, but they had the number one defense over the second half of the season. This is an elite defense. You can't just ISO. That I don't think that'll work at all. Not with a 5'9" point guard as dynamic and great as Isaiah Thomas is offensively. I don't think ISO is the way to go. You've got to find a way to get other people involved. And once they make a couple plays, things change. And I think, you know, there's hope for Crowder because he's going to get a lot of opportunities. He's got to shoot a little better. And then I think Olynyk is a big key. As weird as it seems, as awkwardly as he played in game five, you know, last time he came back from the shoulder injury, his third game, first and second games, he was terrible. That third game, he went off for 20-something points. And what if he does that again? He's going to get a lot of opportunities if he plays. So I think that's why they went to Olynyk as much as they did in game five, because if he's right, if he's even partially right, he can really, really hurt that strategy.
Man, I hope you are right, because he was – the worst player on the floor. I mean, he was bad. And it feeds the anti-Olynyk movement, and I'm pro-Olynyk. I think if he could be any sort of effective, that could be another series-changing type of development. Because you can't count... Look, Jared Sullinger had an okay performance last night, 4 of 9. He hit a couple of shots, which he hasn't been able to do, but it still was not a very good performance. He still has trouble defending any of those guys that he's up against. So if Olynyk could be any good, then I feel so much better about going back to Atlanta for a game seven and actually doing well in a game seven, because that's a game changer. He can do so many little things that will alleviate pressure and just help with that second unit scoring especially. But I think that there are opportunities to kind of change up how they run the offense just a little bit. Maybe you send two guys like a simultaneous screen and let Isaiah read it, and then you can kind of work action off of that where it might confuse the Hawks, or stagger screens that seem to work a little bit last night. Just different things. Just throw more guys there to kind of confuse the Hawks and have the Hawks try to make some decisions.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, man, they got good looks for pretty good shooters. I mean, Jerebko had some good looks. Crowder, as bad as he shot lately. He had some good opportunities. So I swear, like, it sounds crazy because obviously offense was a big issue over those first 18 minutes when they could have built the big lead. They were getting good opportunity. Like, they were attacking that really well, I thought. And then everything went south. everything. That was just a buzzsaw. I mean, the Hawks hit 11 straight shots. I can't remember seeing anything like that. And especially, like, the going into that game, everyone was like, oh, the Hawks are missing open looks. Oh, yeah. Here's 11 straight for you guys.
Yeah. There were so many misses early on that no one could have seen that type of explosion coming.
Yeah, it was crazy. It just more evidence that from game to game, every game in a playoff series is a completely different entity. You don't know what's going to carry on. You don't know whether Paul Millsap is going to give you 8 points or 45. You don't know whether Isaiah Thomas is going to go for 42 or 7. Everything changes every game. There are so many factors that go into everything, and it's fascinating to see a series evolve. And, you know, Jarebko is like this huge change in game three, and he's awesome. And then first half of game four, he's overpowered by Millsap completely, kind of looks like a liability. Second half of game four, like, he's back leading this huge comeback. Just everything changes so quickly. And, I mean, playoff basketball, there's nothing like it. It's so much fun to see two teams go at each other and two evenly matched teams like these teams are, and just trying to find different ways to maximize their advantages. I just love the playoffs. There's nothing like NBA playoff basketball, and it's great that the Celtics are back being competitive in the playoffs against what's really a really good Atlanta Hawks team. And I think if the Celtics were healthy, this is a different series. As I said, you know, with Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder fully healthy, Kelly Olynyk fully healthy, they would have a lot more options offensively. But it's been a fun series anyway, except for that stinker in game five. Yikes.
That leads us to a couple of these Twitter questions. One comes from at Mr. Cena. Kelly Olynyk and Sully are our most skilled bigs and are completely non-existent this series. Are they just mental midgets? Which, I mean, we've talked about the Sully matchup. It's not like he's soft or anything. I think he's pretty smart guy, and it just looks just not a great matchup. He's still pretty good. He's still a pretty good player. He's just a bad matchup. We've talked about that. And Olynyk, that shoulder, I think, is a problem. I just don't think that. And when that shoulder is really bothering, how do you play on a bad shoulder? That's very tough to do. I just don't think he's got the confidence in that shoulder.
So, and it's a shooting shoulder too. So that's another issue. And it's tough when you don't have confidence in your body. Everything changes, and it's obvious he doesn't have full confidence yet in his shoulder and the strength of it, that it will hold up against banging, jostling the post, just normal basketball movements. So yeah. it's been a tough. I mean, he hasn't played too many minutes, obviously, since re-aggravating the injury, but it's been a tough stint for him when he has.
Yeah, it has. And this comes from at CSL underscore Duke, a John Duke, who I believe is a practitioner of the podcast arts.
He is certainly a practitioner of the podcast arts. One of the podcast godfathers.
Yes, yes. John Duke from Celtic Stuff Live, who briefly was a Reds Army hosted entity, but now off on their own again, doing their thing, but always worth a listen. John Duke says, first time, long time. So, gods, what are the odds either Kelly Olynyk or Jay can regain their shooting form, which is what we're talking about. I think, you know, look, like you said, it's all injury related. I like Jay Crowder to get back on track. I just think that he's too good to be this bad, and he runs hot and cold. Like, he was good the other day, so I think he'll be fine.
It seems like he's gotten more confidence in the ankle in other areas, or at least he's learned to adapt to it. He's been really good defensively since game one, and You know, I think he's had some issues chasing Korver, but other than that, like, he's done a great job defensively. I think he at least entered game five second in the NBA playoffs in deflections per game. So he's making an impact everywhere else. It's just he's got to get that confidence in his shooting stroke again. And you could tell he's completely lost confidence. And I don't think he's not one of those, like, natural-born shooters. You know, there are some guys who just have that shooter's mentality where just let it fly. Doesn't matter how many I miss. Next one's going up. I don't think he's like one of those natural born shooters like that. And so I do think he's struggling with confidence right now. You could tell he went for a 1:30 a.m. workout after game four, even after a thrilling win. Or was that game three? Yeah, game three, I guess. So he's clearly dealing with some mental issues right now, as well as physical. And I think he's he has a better chance of snapping out of it just because I think he's more healthy. And Olynyk's the X factor, because if the Hawks keep sending that trap, he is built to play the pick and pop and just ruin that strategy. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Or, you know, you can just run it with Jarebko, can't you?
Yeah, but Jarebko doesn't give you that playmaking. You know, he doesn't have that off the drive capability. He's not as skilled a passer. He's not as skilled a driver. So, I mean, you can play that, and he's not as comfortable, I think. Shoot, as much crap as we give Kelly for up faking himself out of wide open jumpers, I think he's less hesitant to let it fly than Jarebko is most of the time. So. I think there's a big difference between Olynyk and Jarebko when you're running that pick and pop.
Fair enough. And Bailey says, how remarkable is it that the Seas have won two games with so many key guys injured or underperforming? Obviously, Bradley, Kelly, Jay, Sully. Obviously, it's remarkable. This whole season has been remarkable, some of the things that they've done. So, yeah, it's been very remarkable. No one would have been upset, really, if the Celtics had lost in five or six. And that's just, you know, the way it is. You know, it's interesting. I want to bring up, because we were talking about Jay Crowder and his, you know, confidence and all of that. The Jackie McMullen piece on Brad Stevens, which was awesome.
People really hate Brad Stevens, don't they?
Oh, my God.
Nobody gives that guy any respect.
But one thing that she mentioned in the piece, like, she's like, Brad Stevens, and I don't have it in front of me right now, but Brad Stevens can navigate, you know, Evan Turner's short attention span and Marcus Smart's, you know, craziness or... And she mentioned Jay Crowder's sensitivity, and I'd never heard him called sensitive before, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure in what ways he's sensitive. I would imagine, like, I know when he got to the Celtics, he snapped because the media was talking about tanking, and I'm talking he snapped on Brad. He had conversations with Danny. Like, what the hell are we doing? Are we tanking? I don't play to lose. If we're tanking, you know, I'm not going to work as hard as I do to play for a team that doesn't want to win, yada, yada, yada. So maybe that's part of what she's talking about. So I don't know exactly what ways he's sensitive, to be honest.
Well, it's just funny that's something that's not by accident. And maybe that is what it is. Maybe sensitive or emotional, because he is an emotional guy.
And definitely an emotional guy.
It's funny because, especially earlier in the season, every loss brought, like, he was questioning everything. You know, it's, I don't know what our roles are and, you know, all of that stuff. And I think he is an emotional guy. So that brings us to here we are now with him. And when you're an emotional guy, like you said, a guy like... Obviously, not comparing abilities, but Paul Pierce would go through a slump and it wouldn't matter. Wouldn't matter to him at all. A pure scorer like that, just missed 20 in a row, I'll make the 21st, not a big deal. And he just keeps shooting. So it's interesting that the emotional part of Jay Crowder's game, I mean, that could be just something that plays into his shooting, like you said. So I just wanted to bring that up because I'd never heard him called sensitive before. So Marcus Smart shooting the lights out amazingly. Can that continue?
No. I mean, it could. He's done it before. He's had stretches of good shooting where he's weeks, months of good shooting. Now, he just needs to do it for two more games. And then, you know, win one at home. Give yourself a chance at game seven. So I wouldn't put money on him too well, but it would be huge for the Celtics. Did I think one thing we should talk about too is that Atlanta small lineup.
Oh, yes.
With Horford and Mike Scott, which just rampaged over the Celtics in game four, or game five rather, and over the first four games was actually really effective too. So, I mean, it is so bizarre that a lineup with Mike Scott and Thabo Sefolosha would just destroy the Celtics, but that's what happened in game five. And Mike Scott was really, really good. He hurt them in the post. He hit that three, and then everyone got going.
I just really refuse to have the Celtics lose a series to a guy with all those emoji tattoos.
What emoji tattoo would you get if you had to get an emoji tattoo?
Oh, Jesus. Probably, I don't know. Right now, I'd get the poop one because that's how I feel.
I just get
the poop.
You would put poop on your body right now, because the Celtics had a tough game five? Yeah.
I don't know.
That sounds rational.
Well, you asked me the hypothetical question about putting an emoji tattoo on my body, which is completely ridiculous. I think that's a very ridiculous thing to do, but hey, it's his body. But, I mean, I can open up and scroll through my emojis to get a serious answer to the pressing question of what emoji tattoo would I get on my body.
I go with the skull. I just got to be a badass, you know?
Okay, sure. How about the maybe the flame? The flame sounds like a good one. A couple of flames.
Because you fire out all these hot takes on the Rain and Jay podcast.
Exactly. I could put – what else? What are the good ones? Oh, I could put like one of these like alcohol ones. That's relevant to me.
There you go. Any one of those. Oh, like the toilet? You go with the toilet?
Yeah. I mean, I could put – I could put the lemon one on. That's a very hot emoji being used. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go with the lemon emoji, man.
The headphones.
You lost me there.
How about the headphones? I'd put the headphones on. This is such a stupid conversation. Why are we talking about this?
Because Mike Scott is killing the Celtics, and maybe emoji tattoos are the way to go. Maybe Kelly Olynyk should get an emoji tattoo for game six.
What emoji tattoo would Kelly Olynyk get?
That's a good question.
No, it's not.
That is a really good question. Like maybe the one with the shot, like the needle, give himself like a shot in the shoulder. The emoji tattoo of the shot in the shoulder would be like cortisone shot at all times. Boom. He's healthy again.
Oh my goodness. What do the Celtics need to do to win game six?
Other than emoji tattoos.
Other than emoji tattoos.
I honestly think so much of this series comes down to who converts the most in transition. And the Celtics seriously, seriously lost the transition battle in game five because they turned the ball over 20 times, because they only got 8 fast break points. So if you do that, and meanwhile, Atlanta is just converting all these turnovers into easy buckets and converting a lot of your bricks into easy buckets, that changes everything, because neither team can score on the other in the half court. Like, except for that game, Millsap went wild. The Hawks' half court offense has not been good. Boston's half-court offense has not been good at all. So it's just whoever can get the most easy buckets wins. And obviously it's not that simple, but I do think transition buckets and is the most important stat in this series because of the fact that neither team can score on the other when the defenses are set.
I think it really is that simple. The Celtics are at their best when they force turnovers and score in transition. That's where they get a big chunk of their offense. That's when a lot of these other guys score. And if they're not playing defense and trying to go half court versus half court, they are absolutely positively going to lose because the Hawks can game plan and do different things with different lineups that can stop the Celtics. That is, we've seen it throughout the first five games. The Hawks can trot out a number of different lineups that counter the Celtics lineups in the half court. Where the Celtics can really shine is if they play the defense, and it comes down to a matter of desire. Just gotta, we saw them in the third quarter just give up. They just gave up. I saw guys standing around while Atlanta was shooting open threes. They need to finish all of their plays off, finish their rotations off, go out there, force some turnovers, get out and score amongst the chaos because that's where they're their best. So if they can't do that, if they can't play defense, then we'll do a wrap-up podcast after that, and that'll be it. That'll be the end of the season. But I think they can. I think they feed off the energy of the crowd. So let's kind of finish this off with a couple of questions, the similar questions from Alon Sim and D. Brooks. Can you see the Celtics win a Game 7 in Atlanta because they repeatedly look like the weaker team here? And the Celtics need to do what to win on the road? How can they counter the trap that the Hawks throw? We already talked about the trap thing. But when they go on the road, what do they like? Why can't they do in Atlanta what they've done in Boston?
I think that's a good question. I think part of it, games one and two, they had, you know, the bigger lineups that haven't been successful, and they started with that, got themselves off to bad starts. Game one, they actually had a long stretch where they were really good, and obviously they didn't close out that game. They lost by one. But they were successful in a lot of ways in game one doing what they wanted to do. So they have had some success on the road. I think part of it is just the energy of the crowd. And because they have to be so good in transition, as we've talked about, having that extra lift of energy is huge. And having that extra little bounce matters. And it sounds crazy to say that games between two very good basketball teams comes down to which team has that little extra lift from the crowd, but sometimes it matters. And in both of those games, games three and games four, I don't know if the Celtics win without home court. Game four, I think, especially down 16 in the second half, I don't think they come back and win that without the crowd. And the crowd, Boston crowd is unbelievable. Atlanta's crowd sucks, although they got pretty loud when things got good for them in game six or game five. I keep screwing up the games. I've done that a lot. I've done that a lot tonight.
A lot of turnovers there, Jay King. Too sloppy.
Yeah. Maybe I'll get like the pencil eraser emoji tattoo.
Oh my goodness.
Where was I? Do you have anything else to add to my rambling?
No. Well, I want to address what else? The coach of the year voting. Do you care? Does anybody care about Brad Stevens? I saw a lot of consternation that he was not even in the top five of the voting. But
those five, you know what? Those five coaches had damn good seasons too.
They did.
So yeah, I don't have any issue with where he was in the coach of the year vote. Obviously he's a really good coach. So are those other five guys. So, I mean, Steve Clifford took a team that arguably had less talent than the Celtics to the same amount of wins. Steve Kerr, I don't like Steve Kerr winning it, to be honest.
I think Kerr got it because of the 73 wins, and not
he won the team of the year award.
Yeah, but because if they had gotten 69 wins or even 70 wins, but 70 is a magic number. But if he'd gotten anything less than 70 wins,
he coached 39 games.
Yeah, I know. But the thing is, I don't think any media members wanted to be part of the story that a team goes off and wins 73 games and does not have the coach of the year. I don't think any media members wanted to be part of that. So by default, they gave it to Steve Kerr just because.
I still think it's stupid. When you coach less than half the season, come on.
I agree.
Come on. Obviously, his team was unbelievable. Maybe the best team ever. And obviously, it wasn't just this year that coaching goes into. It's the stuff they taught last year. And part of Luke Walton's success was that Steve Kerr set the foundation, yada, yada, yada. I understand all that. The man was on the sideline for 39 games. Give me a break. Give me a break. Popovich needs that.
I mean, look, Popovich was third in the voting. So we know that the coach of the year is usually just like, which team did way better than we expected? And so I could see Stotts getting a big chunk of the votes in Portland. And
because CJ McCollum was a lot better than people knew.
Right. But that's how this voting goes. And that's just, if you know that going in, then you look at which team was supposed to be bad but is actually really good, and there's your coach of the year, generally speaking, unless that 73 wins happened. So Kerr got it because the team just made history, and I don't think guys wanted to not vote for the history, and so whatever. And then after that, after Stotts and Portland going crazy, Look at the Spurs and what they did and the history that they made. And I think that shows exactly that kind of makes my point. Because if Golden State had lost like a couple of games earlier in the season and 73 was never an option, they would have been the Spurs. The Spurs lost once at home. They won, 67 games? They were awesome. Dominant. Again. And Popovich gets third. Really? And then, so I can see Brad Stevens splitting with the Cliffords and Casey. Yeah. So I can see them splitting the vote. It's hard to that's fine with me. Like, I don't care that he was finished sixth. I just think that people probably need to understand that the win was because of the history, and when Popovich is third, come on.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to wrap it up, and hopefully we will do a Game 7 preview podcast, but that can only happen if the Celtics win Game 6. So let's go Celtics. Let's go Boston Garden crowd. You got a job to do on Thursday night. Game 6, Celtics-Hawks, and we'll be talking about it afterwards here on the Rain and Jays podcast.